Wow. Is that powerful music? You know what that's used for? Yeah, when the Crusades were going on. This is Terry Barber, Jess Romero. Charles Colon is with us today. Jesse is here. He's just not going to be on the video until we put him on. But Jess, this is a special edition. Tell us about it.
Yeah, Terry, if this is breaking news.
Yo, go ahead. Your mic, just put.
Yeah, Pope Francis has just abrogated Pope Benedict.
Hold on a second, Jesse. Your mic isn't clear. Give Richard a minute. All right, you're listening to the Terry and Jesse Show. It's a special edition. Charles Colon is with us. Father Charles Murr is going to be joining us. And this is really a show that you won't want to forget. Jesse, are you with us now?
I'm with you. Yeah.
Okay, well, let me do the introduction. Richard's still having some issues. Okay, now we're good. Go ahead, Jess.
This is breaking news,
yeah.
Terry.
Hit it.
Pope Francis, he abrogates Pope Benedict XVI's the universal permission for the old mass. This is big headline news.
Mm-hmm.
Pope Francis has restricted what he calls the divisive traditional or Tridentine Latin Mass, and he says that the 52-year-old Novus Ordo Missae is the unique expression of the church's liturgy. He's made some sweeping changes to the permissions granted to the celebration of the Tridentine Latin Mass. That's what we're going to talk about today. This is big Catholic news, Terry.
And Charles Colon is with us, a church historian. Charles and I go back to our teenage days. So that says maybe 40-some years ago is when I first met you in the early 1970s. And here we are now in our 60s, and we're having an interesting time in church history. Can you give our people a little background for those who don't know who you are? And also about, you also have a podcast that I want people to know about, how they can listen to you on a regular basis. And welcome.
Well, thanks very much. Great to be here. Mm-hmm. As the Grateful Dead told us back when you and I were alive, what a long, strange road it's been.
Yes, amen, brother. But,
at any rate, let's see.
Yeah.
I'm a writer by trade, primarily in history.
Yes.
To a great degree, church history. I do other things. I have a weekly podcast, I should say. It's called Off the Menu, mm-hmm. which you'll find on the Tumblr House, TUMBLAR, mm-hmm. Tumblr House YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. That being the name of the publishing house that sponsor it. And we deal with all sorts of topics in religion, history, politics, culture.
Sure.
Whatever the listeners write in, I answer questions. And we do a lot of joking. We have a lot of fun.
Sure. Well, tell us this now. This topic right now we're dealing with is what Pope Francis has been restricting the traditional Latin Mass and putting restrictions. But it's a little ambiguous, at least from what I've read, because it seems like it's saying one thing and then it says another thing. So kind of give our listeners a perspective on all this.
Well, for want of a better word, it's kind of incoherent.
Yeah.
In the sense that he, in Article 2, he tells us the bishops hold control.
Yeah.
But in every other article thereafter, mm-hmm. Everything has to go through Rome.
Right.
Now, that's... I mean, you know, you can't really have it both ways.
Right.
You know, I'm going to eat food, except nothing goes through my mouth and I won't digest. It's a contradiction.
Yeah.
But to be fair, this sort of contradiction has been the norm in this papacy.
Yeah.
And in fact, His Holiness himself said in an interview with La Nación that God had given him the gift not incomprehensibility, but...
like making a mess of the church?
No, but a lack of mindfulness.
Oh, lack of mindfulness.
He made it clear that he's confused.
Yeah.
Now,
it's pretty obvious.
I mean, he gave me the same gift, but I try to hide it. The father doesn't, you know. But he's very proud of it. And that sort of mental confusion has simply gotten stronger and stronger.
Yeah, he's 84 years old, let's be honest. I mean,
he's 84. He was elected with half a lung. He just got a chunk out of his intestines.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I have wondered for the last several years whether or not he had a touch of dementia.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because, I mean, let's put it this way. If this were a friend of mine, I would really, really wonder.
Yeah, of course.
Now, let me give you my take, Charles. Here's what I think. I believe that, we've been warned about theologians like this. I believe that he's embraced modernism. I believe that he's a Novo Theologi modernist, and he just happens to be the Bishop of Rome now. That's the first point. I also believe that he is influenced by communism. He said it himself that his favorite teacher that he still keeps in touch with to this day was a female communist professor who affected his life. He said this on different interviews, that she was the most influential thinker and professor in his life. It was a communist. Third, when he wrote one of his last encyclicals, you had the Masons all over the world. They were applauding and saying, this is exactly what we promote. And so in my opinion, from looking at the big picture, I think he's been influenced by the three M's, which are not good: modernism, masonry, and Marxism. Thank you. That's it. That's my take.
Well, believe me, that's quite possibly not untrue. But the thing is, he shows no prudence even in accomplishing those designs, if you see what I'm saying.
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do.
In other words, if he were a prudent ideologue, he wouldn't throw down the gauntlet like this. This is not the way people of that sort have succeeded over the past century. They've done so quietly, so intelligently, carefully. I have no doubt what you say is true about his basic formation. In fact, I'd take you a step further. In addition to it, remember that he is a product of the Jesuit training when it was being dismantled.
Of course. There you go. Yep.
And Germany.
As a result, he's left with all the, arrogance that the Jesuits were accused of, without any of the substance. And you can see this because he'll use big words and he doesn't know what they mean, especially when he's trying to be insulting. Like Neo-Pelagian. Remember, he started calling all sorts of people Neo-Pelagian. Mm-hmm. Well, there's certainly a lot of Neo-Pelagians in the church today, but they're more in the hierarchy than in the area than, you know, the people he was attacking. But if you unite all that to a mental frailty, it would explain his lack of tactical finesse, shall we say. Mm-hmm. The other thing, too, I'd like to point out is that beyond and above, remember that while we all do what we're doing, there are higher and more important things going on. God himself, the devil himself, are all doing what they do. What we see is the front of things. You know, life's like an iceberg. Now, I really believe that we're at a time in our history, in the history of the church, the history of the world, where on the one hand, Pope Francis is almost bringing us the reductio ad absurdum of radical ultramontanism. Mm-hmm. The Pope can do no wrong. If he says 2 and 2 are 5, that's it. Well, that's an extreme view that has been brought down to its absurd conclusion. Just as with our Orthodox friends, the chinks in their armor have been revealed with the schism between Moscow and Constantinople. Mm-hmm. It's almost as though we were all of us being forced to look at our worst sides. And that, because there's nowhere to go.
Right.
Now, that's always true. I mean, Lord, where shall we go? But it's as though our faces were really being rubbed in it. That's one point. The second point, though, is that over the past 25 years, there have been 6 Eucharistic miracles approved by the church. Yeah. 6.
Good point. Why is that?
Why is that indeed?
Yep, we know.
Let's pretend for a second that there is a God who knows what he's doing.
Let's presume that, huh?
Let's presume just for the moment. Okay. And he knows past, present, future, etc.
Absolutely.
So what does he do? In the midst of confusion, in this particular moment of history in which we live, he sends us signs. I really come down on the altar every day. Whatever kind of madness is going on, fear not, little flock. I am with you unto the end of all things.
Amen.
And this is the most important thing to bear in mind, because if you look back at the history of the church, and mind you, I've had a lot of friends, you know, I quipped that Julius III lives again. And the friend said, well, he never tried to ban the Mass. And I said, no, but he did give a diocese over to a Lutheran knowingly. Mm. And that diocese has not been part of the church since.
It's wow.
The thing is, we see everything through our own lens of now.
Yes.
No crisis in the church is ever precisely like any other. Mm-hmm. We never had three popes until we did, and we haven't had them since.
Right.
We never had all but five bishops of the church denying the divinity of Christ until we did, and then it hasn't happened since. Anything that has happened can happen again,
yes.
But there can also be annoying surprises. And the only answer at the end of the day you can really give, bearing in mind the assurances heaven has given us that God really is still in control despite our best efforts, the only thing we can really be assured of is that this too will pass unless it's the end of time.
Well said, Charles. Terry Barber, Jess Romero, Charles Colon. We've got Father Charles Murr coming on at the halfway part, talking about the Pope's restricting divisive traditional Latin Mass. He says a 52-year-old Novus Ordo, he says, is a unique expression of the church's liturgy. When we come back, we'll talk more about the effect it's having on the church. Stay with us, family. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Terry and Jesse Show. To join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Now, here's Terry and Jesse.
Breaking news, Pope Francis has issued a new motu proprio restricting the traditional Tridentine Latin Mass.
Yep.
And he's declared that the liturgy of Pope Paul VI, or the Novus Ordo, that's been around for 52 years, is here's the things that I have a hard time wrapping my mind around. It's the unique expression of the lex orandi of the Roman Rite. What, Charles, I want to ask you a question. You're a church historian. So you have two popes here who are disagreeing theologically because Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI, his Summorum Pontificum, described the Novus Ordo as the ordinary expression of the lex orandi. And he said that the Latin Mass or the Tridentine Mass that has never been abrogated, he said it's the extraordinary form. Well, now Pope Francis has done away with that language. He didn't even wait till Pope Benedict died. I mean, talk about throwing somebody under the bus. He doesn't wait till his predecessor dies. He disagrees with him, and basically, not only disagrees with him, theologically, he overturns what Pope Benedict taught, and he also, I want to ask you, didn't St. Pius V, and I quote, Saint, S-T before his name, didn't he say something very laudable about the Tridentine Mass as well? So you have two popes, Pope Benedict and Pope St. Pius V, saying things very laudable about the Tridentine Mass, and Pope Francis, the first Jesuit that we've ever had in the office of the Bishop of Rome, he just abrogates it in one fell swoop.
Well, there are a couple of things to bear in mind here. One is that in Summorum Pontificum, Pope Benedict points out that the traditional rites of the Mass were never abrogated. And we need to look at that a little bit more mm-hmm. clearly to understand where we are right now. When St. Pius V promulgated what's now called the Tridentine Mass, the Extraordinary Form, etc., in 1570, he did a couple of things. Firstly, he declared that any rite that was older than 200 years old could continue. All right, it's important to bear in mind that the Tridentine Mass did not pop into existence in 1570. What he did was he codified a number of existing variations of the Roman Rite into one, but he allowed those that were around before for 200 or more years, like the Sarum Rite, the Rite of Lyon in France, the Ambrosian Rite in Milan, and so on and so on. He allowed those to remain. That was point one. Point two, he declared that his co-primum was to remain in perpetuity. Now, people have argued back and forth over whether or not co-primum could, in fact, be abrogated. But here's the point. Paul VI did not abrogate co-primum.
Nope.
He added, alongside it, you may say, the rite that the Holy Father now declares is the unique expression. But he did not abrogate quo primum, and he did not attempt to. Whether or not he could have, that's a whole other issue. The reason why the committee of cardinals that John Paul II appointed to look into the legality of the Tridentine Mass declared to him that it had never been abrogated is because it stands and falls with quo primum. A less solemn papal document cannot abrogate a more solemn one.
Mm.
Basically, the Holy Father would have to specifically abrogate quo primum by an apostolic constitution of equal solemnity.
Got it.
And that has never happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 1974, and this is where the idea that there's restrictions on the Tridentine Mass come from. In 1974, the Congregation for Divine Worship issued an unsigned note that declared that the use of the old missal was forbidden. Now, this was definitely ultra vires. The congregation had no authority to do this. I mean, they might as well abrogate the creed while they're at it. It's ultra vires. They can't do it.
Right.
So, John Paul II, as I say, but I have to say that note was used by bishops all over the world to suppress the Tridentine Mass.
Wow.
Mm.
It's very important to bear in mind.
Yeah.
Innumerable clerical careers were destroyed around the world using that decree, that unsigned note.
Yep.
Now, John Paul II comes along. He looks at it. He has it examined. His cardinals will look into it and say, nope, it has never been legally abrogated. He never published this decision, although it was easily and freely leaked. But it is obviously the basis upon which Benedict XVI declared in his motu proprio that they had never been abrogated. So, where does this leave us? It means that Francis may abrogate summorum pontificum all he likes. It does not change the legal status of the Tridentine Mass.
Got it.
All summorum pontificum did was it allowed the reality to be applied in a tangible way, whereas before it wasn't. I mean, similarly, give you a concrete illustration.
Mm-hmm.
There's never been a ban on saying the Novus Ordo in Latin. Well, except at St. Peter's today.
Can't do that today, yeah.
Yes, except at St. Peter's. Mm-hmm. But other than that, there's never been any abrogation, any law forbidding the use of the Novus Ordo in Latin. But the truth, the reality, where people actually live, is that any priest back in the day, who would say the Novus Ordo in Latin on a regular basis, it was the end of his career. That's just the way it was. Now, one of the things that I find interesting about this, and this goes back to a defect in our Catholic mindset that many of us have,
mm-hmm.
is the difference between legality and reality.
Right.
We have trouble with this, and we have the trouble because we, for so long, had a hierarchy that more or less played by the law, but when they stopped, our minds didn't quite catch up with it.
Hmm.
But, you know, if a bishop were to say tomorrow, we're no longer using the creed in this diocese, that's just wrong. The fact that there might be no appeal, the fact that the Pope might back him up, it doesn't change the fact that you cannot suppress the creed. But a lot of us would go along with it.
Ouch.
And again, the problem, too, is that the obvious solution is simply to rebel and throw out the hierarchy. Well, you can't do that either. We're in a terrible, terrible position at the moment. It takes a lot of prayer, a lot of thought, a refusal to make rash or sudden judgments.
Well said.
Charles, let me jump in and ask you a question. To me, it appears as if, as I'm reading Article 3, where it says, Pope Francis continued by dealing with the diocese that there are already celebrations of the traditional liturgy. In such places, the local bishop is to ascertain that any groups celebrating the traditional liturgy do not deny the validity and the legitimacy of the liturgical reform of Vatican II Novus Ordo. What does this mean on a practical level? Does this mean that, you know, every FSSP priest or Institute of Christ the King, or any other Latin Mass religious order, does this mean that they're going to have to, can celebrate on Holy Thursday with the bishop downtown? Does this mean they're going to have to allow a Novus Ordo Mass in their parish? what does this actually mean? Because the Pope also wants to alter the traditional liturgy by having the readings proclaimed in the vernacular instead of Latin. So he's inserting his authority or his power into the liturgy. And I think he's trying to make maybe like the FSSP priests cry uncle, like say, yes, yes, I, you know, crank their arm behind their back like a schoolyard bully and say, yes, yes, I accept everything that, you know, et cetera. I accept everything the Vatican II accepts. It's perfect. It's, you know, I don't know what's going on here, but this seems like a bully in a playground.
Well, yes, but you'll notice that's been the keynote of this pontificate. I mean, he's always been that way. Mm-hmm. Look at the Friars of the Immaculate.
Yep, good example.
You know, bullying is what he does. And I mean, I could pull up his biography and give you all kinds of guesses as to why he's the way he is. But he is this way. The problem, however, for him is severalfold. Number one, his time is limited, and I'm sure that he wants to the degree that he's playing with a full deck, I'm sure he wants to leave his mark on his way out. And that is true, incidentally, of his generation in the hierarchy. And this is something that has to be borne in mind. They can see that the future is not theirs. They can see that their 1968 eternity...
dying out.
It is...
Of course.
The thing that always cracks me up is when His Holiness will replace a retiring figure with somebody who's even older. Which, you know, you got to wonder about that. But he, some years ago, he basically declared war on the young people of the church when he started calling them rigid and all that. It's never wise to attack your future. And I can understand why he's upset. I really can. But the thing to bear in mind is that he and his generation of clerics were not the people who brought in these changes in the sense of dreaming them up. They were the ones who implemented them. And as far as they're concerned, and I might say guessing from what I've heard from them, as far as they're concerned, their life's work is in jeopardy. If the Tridentine Mass is not suppressed, then their lives have been a waste. And they might as well have never been born. It perhaps would have been better for them had they never been born.
Charles, here's my opinion. I believe that if all this is implemented with the jackboot on our neck, I actually think that this is going to feed so many people to the SSPX.
Ho, 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 ho.
I think they're going to grow.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to grow. They're going to be huge. Because there's several people that they don't know the nuances that you're talking about or the politics of the church, but they have a detraction to the Latin Mass. And if they're going to suppress it in some way, shape, or form, or modify it, this is going to send just a simple hoi polloi rank and file people. They're going to swell the ranks of the SSPX. It's going to have a boomerang effect.
Let me tell you, what this is going to look like to an average simple person is that the man who handed over the underground church in China and had Pachamama worship at the Vatican is now suppressing the Latin Mass.
That's it.
You're quite right. I mean, most people, see, as an hierarchical church, the Pope's children should not have to make these decisions.
Correct.
We should never have had this garbage stuck in our faces.
Of course not.
And that goes all the way back to when we were young. You know, I commented online that I've seen this game already with St. Paul VI. I've already lived this dream. I saw it. And so did you, and so did a lot of our listeners.
Sure.
The difference is that he was trading off the moral capital of his predecessors. The Holy Father today does not have that moral capital. Back in 1968, if a pope said, all right, everyone, we're going to start wearing our trousers on our heads now, a lot of us would say, well, I don't like it, but okay.
Yeah.
Now, the emperor has no clothes is obvious. So I think you're going to see a lot of resistance. I think you will see people go to the SSPX. I think you'll see the Holy Father ignored in a lot of places, especially places with more or less decent bishops.
When we come back, we still have Charles Colon with us, Jesse Romero. Father Charles Murr is going to join us when we come back from this quick break to discuss more on the liturgy on the Terry and Jesse Show on Virgin Most Powerful Radio. Stay with us.
Welcome back to the Terry and Jesse Show. To join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Now, here's Terry and Jesse.
Again, breaking news, Pope Francis has just abrogated Pope Benedict's universal permission for the old mass. This is big headline news. The Pope Francis has restricted what he calls the divisive traditional Latin mass. He says that the 52-year-old Novus Ordo Missae is the unique expression of the church's liturgy. I think we have Father Muir on.
We do. Do we? Father Charles Muir, welcome to the Terry and Jesse Show.
Greetings, gentlemen. Terry and Jesse, it's always a joy and privilege being on with you, but yes, it is a singular privilege to be on with Mr. Charles Columbe. I'm telling you, this is unbelievable for me.
Go well, we love having him on here. He's an old friend from when I was in high school, and I just think he's so knowledgeable on this topic. But Father Muir, you've been listening, I know, to our show, and we've been talking about this, and I just wanted to get your take as a priest who's been in Rome in the 1970s, right after all the changes, and I think you had friendship with Father Vincent Michelli, and I just wanted to, give you an opportunity to tell our listeners, you know, your take on all this.
I don't even know where to begin.
Well, let's begin.
I don't know where to begin. I just remember I was telling you this before the program.
Yeah.
Father Vincent Michelli was a professor of mine. He taught a seminar, The Gods of Atheism, and it was superb. And he was a character and a half.
Jesuit.
Lovable man. Mm-hmm. There was a group of students, lay students we all were, who we found out that he said the Tridentine Mass. He had to say it in secret, and I mean in secret in those days.
Wow.
I get a kick out of hearing that there was never any problem with celebrating the Tridentine Mass, and it was never abrogated. And this, are you kidding?
It was in practice.
Listen, finally we convinced him we wanted to attend his Mass.
Yeah.
Well, we left at 5:30 in the morning on a public bus to go to San Callisto catacombs to hear his Mass. We wanted it that much underground.
Why is that, Father? What would have happened if he was caught? Tell us.
I'm sure that he would, at that time, he was still a Jesuit, so he would have been suspended, I think, by the Jesuits, or they wouldn't permit him to say Mass at all in public. Seriously, there were grave consequences for it. So this is simply not true. When I read Pope Benedict's motu proprio, it was great, but I thought, what does he mean? It's never been prohibited. It was in effect. It certainly was.
In practice, it was
de facto.
Yeah,
de facto. Yeah,
de facto. It certainly was.
Yep.
So, I don't know what to tell you. This is just crazy. I just began saying the Tridentine Mass about 5 years, and it has revolutionized my spiritual life, and I mean that. It's beautiful. There's a contact that I never experienced before. I always believed it. I knew it, if you will, but I never experienced it as deeply as in the Tridentine Mass, and it's beautiful. And people are, you cannot imagine the amount of the number of young people who have they're not coming from anything, who are absolutely intrigued by the Latin Mass and who have found their place in the church through the Latin Mass. These are people who were, practically speaking, unchurched, and they're coming to it. I found it also ironic that yesterday I finally received the first copy of the Benedictus Missalette, and it corresponds with this one that we're meeting today, you know? Anyway, I'm going all over the place.
Well, I just want to ask you a question, Father. I'm going to give you my take and ask you this question. I believe that statistically, I see these statistics, and I've got them since 1970, how many people have been leaving the church. There's just a huge, 57% back in even 1974 were going to church. We're down to about 15% now. There's the percentage of the nuns that are not even going to say that they're even Catholic has gone down so much in these last 50 years. I'm going to make my assessment as a layman, not as a theologian, not as a historian, but it got Joe Sixpack in the pews. And I say that the supernatural aspect of the Mass, especially when we went to the vernacular, was like, it's ordinary. No big deal. People didn't get the message that we were at that one eternal sacrifice. Even though we are, it just wasn't expressed clearly. So I'm saying this, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but the Tridentine Mass, the Latin Mass in general, separates what we normally do during a day, and we use a sacred language, and we have sacred actions that demonstrate very clearly what takes place on that altar, especially with the Tridentine Mass. It does also in the ordinary, with the Novus Ordo Mass, especially when it's in Latin, I think it really makes it even clearer, less room for liturgical abuses. But my question to you is, am I onto something about the supernatural that you are, that's articulated so clearly with the Latin Mass and not as clear in the English Mass?
Yeah, for a number of reasons. But one of them is, I think that one of the principal anyway, is that the Tridentine Mass or the traditional Mass is being directed to God.
Yes.
I mean, of course, you could say that also about the Novus Ordo. Sure. I understand that. But it's the priest is speaking to God in the name of the people. And it's this is what's going on.
Yep.
And there's a real sense of that happening. In the Novus Ordo, turned toward the people, even when the prayer is directed to God, if you look at most priests, they're speaking to the people as if the people are God.
That's the point.
It's the direction is wrong.
Sure.
The direction is wrong.
Yeah.
Let me just make 2 points to Charles and Father Murr. 2 points I want to make is, I believe that Pope Francis, his whole background, just remember where he came from, Argentina. He lived around Latin American strongmen. He's governing the church like a Latin American strongman. First point I want to make, then I want your comments. Second point I want to make is this. We know that that Latin is a sacred language. We know the diabolical hates Latin. That's the reason Latin is such a powerful language is because, as Father Ripperger says, Hebrew, Greek, and Latin were affixed to the instrument of our salvation, the cross. That's why they're sacred. The diabolical hates that sacred language. And once again, there's a Masonic influence of the church. There's a Marxist influence in the church. There's a modernist influence in the church that hates the Latin language because of its efficacy. Charles, comments? Father, comments?
Well, Father, you want to use benefit of clergy and go first?
Yeah, that's cute.
aren't you kind? I'll tell you what. The Latin language is just so beautiful because this is the thing. I remember when I was learning German, my father said, "Don't waste your time on German. It's a dead language." I said, "It's not a dead language. What are you talking about?" He said, "It's a dead language. Only the dead have time to learn its grammar." that's it. But the idea, too, of Latin, of ecclesiastical Latin, being a dead language in the sense that it's formed, it's stopped developing in new ideas, this, that, and the other thing. It preserves all of our dogmas, our doctrine.
Yes.
It holds on to them. The Mass is fixed. It's not changed. There's a permanence that comes through. It also gives the idea of really truly being Catholic, at least 2,000 years of Catholic, and I think you underscored this very well, Jesse. You've got to question why it is so hated by those on the left of things.
Absolutely.
They don't just dislike it. They hate it. They despise it. Now, there's something wrong with that. I mean, I don't like split pea soup. But, I mean, I don't go insane about it and try and talk to everybody. I talk against it to everybody. There's something wrong. And it really does. It really does go into the territory of diabolical. There's a nerve that's being hit that's not natural.
Got it.
I have apart from, of course, defending split pea soup as a man of French Canadian descent, that being our national dish.
Bam, mon vieux.
you asked Cardinal Gagnon about pea soup. He would have told.
I have Gagnon and I have the Le Tourneau on my mother's side. Yes.
Yeah. See, But seriously, the you're quite right. And I mean, the thing is, the irrationality that is shown here, I have no doubt, like most of the things that we human beings go through, there's a natural and a supernatural or a preternatural origin. In other words, usually, unless you're possessed, the devil doesn't simply speak through you. But what he does do is take what's already there and make it worse.
Yes.
So this generation of clerics that are passing away, not quickly enough for some of us, perhaps, although I'm going with them, sadly, so I'm not that keen on their going away. But
makes two of us.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Anyway, but they nevertheless see, as I said earlier, the Latin Mass represents the antithesis of everything their life was given to destroying. Its resurgence means, on a purely human, purely natural level, that their work was in vain, their lives were wasted. Now, that's never an easy message for anybody. Trust me. I don't care who you are. If I come to you and I say, your whole life was pointless. If you'd never been born, we'd all be better off. Well, nobody likes that.
Yeah.
But that is where the devil can really act on them and make them so nasty and so horrific. We all have our chinks that he uses, all of us. And he doesn't care what they are. You know, as long as they're there, he doesn't care. He'll use them. But for the people of whom we're speaking, this is the great chink in the armor, and this is why the Latin has to go. This is why the Mass has to be suppressed. And it's the fury and the incoherence.
Yes.
I mean, this is the thing that really gets me. Two other points that I neglected to make earlier, but I'll throw in here for lack of a better point. Earlier, Jesse mentioned that the SSPX will doubtless explode in size because of this. So will two other groups.
Charles, hang your thought. This is a good teaser. Two other groups you're going to talk about when we come back from the break, that this is an effect. Remember, the way you worship is the way you believe. You're listening to the Terry and Jesse Show, talking about the liturgy, the Eucharist, the Mass, the source and summit of the Christian life. We'll be back with more to inspire you to fall deeper in love with Jesus Christ. Stay with us, family. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Terry and Jesse Show. To join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Now, here's Terry and Jesse.
Welcome back to the Terry and Jesse Show. Charles Colon, Father Charles Murr is with us. Charles was making a comment about the effect of this new breaking news that Pope Francis has made several sweeping changes to the permissions granted to the celebration of the traditional Latin Mass. Now, Charles, you were saying there's three groups that this is going to affect. Please continue.
Well, the first I mentioned was the Society of St. Pius X, who Jesse earlier said, quite correctly, I think, will explode in size. But the other two that come to mind are the City of Acantus, who will use this as the banning of everything before 52 years ago.
Yeah.
They will use this as proof that Francis is no real pope. And the folk who believe that Benedict's abdication was invalid and that he is still the pope will certainly, you know, use this. For me, that latter position, I wish I could hold it. You know,
would love that. But
wishful thinking. It'd be great. But sadly, we have what we have, and this brings me to one last point on this issue, and that is, in this area, that the temptation will be to hate. And we trads, you know, we like abused children in a lot of ways, adult children of abusive parents. We've spent decades being kicked around by the people who were supposed to be caring for us, and instead gave us rocks and serpents when we asked for bread. And that breeds a certain kind of bitter zeal. It's never helped us before. It certainly has been used as divisiveness by the people in charge at the moment. We've got to try not to succumb to it, not simply for tactical reasons, but more importantly for spiritual ones.
Amen.
The devil wants us to hate, and he wants us to despair. That's very important that we don't give him what he's asking us for. No despair, no hatred, We have to pray for the Holy Father and his minions.
Exactly.
Very, very hard for their conversion.
And Charles, I might jump in and say, in addition to praying for him, making reparation, because so much of this that's gone on is offensive to God. I'm just be honest with you. The things that have been going on. And so that's why every Thursday night here at the Sacred Heart Chapel, 2 hours before the Blessed Sacrament, we pray for the Pope. And what we pray for is that the Pope will confirm us in our faith. And I will say this, and then Father Charles, I want you to make your comment. The Pope is the vicar of Christ, not the superior of Christ. So Father Charles, are we on to something about prayer and reparation for the times we live in today?
Well, you're on to everything, not on to something. Yes, that's extremely important. I just read something earlier. I wish it were my idea, but somebody made a comment about this whole situation, saying he wondered or she wondered whether the motu proprio that Francis just gave is going to be given the same consideration that the encyclical Humanae Vitae was given.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good point.
Excellent point.
Yeah. And you know what? You know what? I've always said this in all of our programs together. Mm-hmm. There has to be in the life of faith a place for humor. I never believe anybody who's absolutely firm in the faith and of humor. There's something wrong. It doesn't click. And what Charles is saying about not hating is so important, because we're given to that immediately.
Amen.
But we mustn't just continue on and. You know, continue on and be happy about life and about what God has given us. And I'll tell you something else, too, just one last thing.
Tell us.
We never had this moment that I can recall, except maybe in the Arian heresy, okay? But this moment to really understand things so clearly. Things are being put in front of us that we can see now clearly what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
There are no excuses. And one great thing of the Second Vatican Council was the call for the laity to take its rightful place in the church. And I think this has got the hierarchy a little bit upset, because they are upset. They don't want to give in to that. But it's a right that we have in baptism, everyone has. And it's about time that we start exercising it, lay people especially.
Father Murr, if Jesse Romero and Terry Barber were priests, we'd have our faculties taken away. But because we're lay people, we are saying things that upset the hierarchy. We can just tell you over the history. Jesse, am I right or wrong? How many times we've been taken off shows because different bishops come and say, "You can get rid of those two guys. They're crazy. They're cowboys."
Let me ask Charles and Father Murr a question. It seems to me like many of the people that are in the hierarchy today, they suffer from spiritual amnesia. What do I mean by that? Do they forget the, 1,600 years of saints that had a love for the Latin Mass, both in private and in public liturgy, the lingua franca of the church? I mean, names such as St. Augustine, St. Jerome, St. Ambrose, St. Benedict, St. Patrick, St. Pope Gregory the Great, St. Francis of Assisi, St. Dominic, St. Anthony of Padua, St. John Vianney, St. Padre Pio, even St. Faustina. Are you kidding me? We have countless saints throughout the church. They prayed in the sacred language, and it seems like in 52 years, we've said, get rid of that. We're going to try something new. And the new experiment has almost emptied the church.
Yep.
Prior to 1965, we had 75% of Catholics in America going to Holy Mass. Right now, we got about 10% of Catholics going to Holy Mass on Sunday. The experiment of 52 years has failed. Am I the only one that sees this?
No.
Charles?
No, you're not. You're not alone in seeing that. But if I were given to conspiracy theories, I would wonder. Maybe that's why it happened to begin with, to empty the churches, because it's been quite effective.
Oh yeah,
it's been quite effective. What you have to remember too, historically, all of a sudden, a document came out from Paul VI, requiring every bishop to resign at 75, present his resignation.
Right.
That cleaned the slate. We had bishops, I don't know if you remember this, we had bishops, some of them were 95 years old. and they were in charge of their diocese, and that's it.
Yep.
Now 75. Well, that made room for a whole brand new ideology of bishops with different thoughts. And they were, Jadot in the United States was very proud. He gave an interview to Time magazine very proudly proclaiming that he named 70, I think it was 75 or 78 liberal bishops. He changed the history of the United States with that.
Yeah.
And you had Cardinal Baggio in the Congregation for Bishops naming very liberal bishops. This was what they did. So there was a whole, I don't want to say conspiracy behind it. There was an ideology behind who these men were going to be.
Yeah.
And that's why things changed so crazily and so easily and so quickly. You know?
And they...
Yeah, we're dealing with the consequences today. Just one last thing. I find it amazing with all of the problem we have with abuse situations and with payments of this and money of that. And in the Vatican, there again we've got people arrested for financial shenanigans.
Yep. Yep.
What in the world? Why doesn't somebody clean house before getting upset about the liturgy in Latin? What is the matter with these people?
Good point.
I mean, it's amazing. It's just amazing to me.
Well,
is it a question of look over here, look at the birdie over here, don't look at over there?
Yeah.
Something's wrong.
This is also on the heels of a year, to 6 months to a year, of the Pope and most of the bishops of the world forbidding the sacraments.
Yeah.
Now, they gave the message on the one hand that all you need to do is make your perfect act of contrition and your spiritual communion, you're good to hook. But then on the other, we're going to tell you what to do.
control, right?
It's all about control and not about content.
Yes.
It's about law and not about truth.
Amen.
Now, right. When you look at that, and you also bear in mind that they're kind of unrealistic in general, there is a great reckoning coming. You know, you heard this all through the hot summer of burning love here in the States, when things are being burned down and in the wake of the Floyd riots and all that. There's got to be a reckoning. You know, that's very often true, but you shouldn't ask for it because those reckonings can be very painful. And I'm afraid that the Holy Father and the bishops are going to be dealing... Well, in the next world, certainly. But in this world, they're going to be dealing with some real problems that they are not expecting. And that in the long run, nobody is really going to benefit from. You know, your question earlier, will this be received the way Humanae Vitae was? I think so.
Oh, yeah.
I think a lot of people will look at him and look at his talking and look at, as you say, all this stuff going on that he doesn't have a problem with, but now he's cracking on the Latin. They're going to say, you know what? Just come back when you're sane and rational again, and we'll talk. You know, but until you overcome the whole dementia piece, that's nice, Holy Father. Have a nice day.
I think this. And I hate to say, but this document or this motu proprio, I think whatever credibility he had left with a lot of Catholics, I think he lost all credibility with serious Catholics. And you're right. This document is going to go by the wayside. People are just going to pay lip service to it because the only branch of the church where there's a resurgence and growth is the Latin Mass parishes. And so this is basically the kiss of death for a lot of people that, again, love the Catholic faith. But again, they're just going to pay lip service to what he says now, because this was the straw that broke the camel's back.
I had a very bad feeling when the Holy Father gave his prayer at the beginning of the COVID. You remember he was sitting there in front of St. Peter's, the rain was coming down.
Mm-hmm.
And mind you, this is totally subjective. It doesn't mean anything. It was like he was vanishing into the distance.
Jesse, I hear the music, brother. What?
Take it away, Terry.
Okay, listen, I just want to say, everybody, like this show. Get it to your friends. This is an important topic. Again, someone said about the where's our leaders taking us? That's where the church goes. That's what Monsignor George Kelly said in his book, Battle for the Church. But we need to pray hard and stay in the state of grace, because after everything is all said and done, it matters about if souls are saved, everything is saved. If souls aren't saved, nothing is saved. Up next, Bible with the Barbers. I'm actually switch hitting today. Pinch hitting again. But I want to thank all of you who support us here at Virgin Most Powerful. And I want to thank Father Charles Murr and Charles Stallone for joining us here on the Terry and Jesse Show. I hope this inspires you to love Jesus Christ more and his church and continue to spread the faith. May God richly bless you and full sheen ahead here at Virgin Most Powerful. God love you.